Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster along with my buddy John Couch. John's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, it's Buckmaster on Monday, December 21st, 2020. Happy solstice. Winter solstice, that means that, starting tomorrow, the days will start to get a little longer, and we'll get through this winter, and spring will be right around the corner. Spring in Tucson can come as early as February, as you well know. We are bringing folks together right here on the radio on the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio on 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk, worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. We take the piggyback live feed from kvoi.com, the Buckmaster Show live line presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Our Monday political face-off is presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Since 1985, this fine family-owned and run business has been supplying custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing, hanging services, hanging systems. They are now doing e-commerce on the newly redesigned website, which includes the Buckmaster collection of fine antique prints and maps. So check it out. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com for the website. It's time for our Monday political face-off. John Munger is seated to my right. Mr. Munger, well-known Tucson attorney, former president of the Arizona Board of Regents, Republican candidate for Arizona governor, and seated to my left, Jeff Rogers, again, a well-known Tucson attorney, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Gentlemen, how was the weekend, this final weekend before Christmas?
Wonderful weekend.
Did you get your Christmas shopping done?
Yeah, absolutely. Got it all done.
Jeff, what's this I hear about your dog? There was an incident at the Jeff Rogers house over the weekend. You left the house just momentarily, didn't you?
I was gone for a couple of hours. First time I've left my new adopted dog from the Pima Animal Care Center alone. And when I got back, she had chewed through my my Cox cable connection. And so I had to go up to the Ace Hardware at Sunrise and Swan and get some cable parts and splice the cable back together. And while I was there, I went to your advertiser,
Mona's Danish Bakery,
and had a cheese Danish. I brought two of them home,
and
my wife said that was probably the best cheese Danish she'd ever had, and it was remarkably flaky. The crust part, the cheese part was just, you know, really good, like any other one, but the crust was just really delicate and flaky and just really, really wonderful cheese Danish.
John, Jeff's dog is lucky to be alive, would think. I have this vision of biting into an electrical cord, Jeff, in that scene in Christmas Vacation.
Jeff said before the show started that this dog, he didn't mention it, but this dog, when he was gone, chewed through his cable to his computer, and the dog's lucky to be alive, but that, you know, that's what puppies are all about.
Sure.
And God bless them, we love them.
Wondering where the parents are and got all excited. Anyway, on this first day of winter, I wanted to begin by reading what Margaret Renkel, she's a contributing op-ed writer and writes about natural history and things in the New York Times. Let me just begin with this quote. "The day is coming when we will all sit around the table again and, be taking a little bite from each other's plates. We will go to the movies again. We'll read books among strangers in coffee houses again. We'll sing out loud in church services and concerts again. We will tell jokes in the break room to each other again. And we will blow out the candles and our birthday cakes again. We may even trust our government again." And that leads me, John and Jeff, to our topic of the day, that strikingly, the United States is the only established democracy over the last few years to see a major decline in social trust. In fact, the United States is becoming more like Brazil, where trust is around 5%. What makes this country unique, and why are we now not so distrustful, John Munger, of each other?
Well, we're distrustful for a number of reasons. Number one, we're a party of, or we're a country of divided cultures, not just politics, but cultures. We really have separate cultures in this country. We have very divided politics. You've got the Democratic Party moving far to the left. You've got the Republican Party holding strong on its conservative values. And that they can't meet in the middle because they're too far apart. I think what really started it all, and Jeff will disagree with this, but that's fine. You know, the Republicans and conservatives really didn't like Barack Obama, but we didn't fight him on individual issues. We fought him on policies. We didn't burn down things and try to divide the country. We fought him on policies, but then when Trump came along, the Democrats just went crazy attacking him personally and with false attacks, such as this conspiracy with Russia and things that have been disproven. And they went nuts. And my side of the political spectrum and the cultural spectrum really didn't like that. And we take umbrage at it. They've divided the country. They've forced that division. The Democrats have, the liberals, progressives have. And the Republicans and conservatives are fighting back. The other thing that's happened is this election. We never really got our day in court. There were all these cases that came up were largely turned down by the courts on procedural issues. We never got to the merits of these issues about corruption and fraud and all of these things, election problems. So the conservatives are feeling very upset that we had an election stolen from us. We're tired of it. Okay. The Democrats play hardball, and Republicans have always played by the rules, Queensberry rules. And we're not going to do that anymore. They want to play hardball. We're going to play hardball back. And that's been started by the Democratic Party, starting with Trump in particular. They just wouldn't concede the election. Okay. And they never have conceded the election. And we're caught now in a position where the only way for conservatives to fight is played by the Democrat rules, and Democrats don't like it. But they laid down the rules, and we're going to fight back.
All right, let's now hear from Jeff
Rogers.
Well,
the Trump team legal team has been laughed out of the courtroom 60-plus times.
On procedural issues.
All of these allegations were totally and completely without merit, and every court that's looked at it has said there's no merit here. Sometimes they had no standing, as in the Supreme Court, but in other cases they had plenty of standing. They just couldn't prove it, and judges laughed out loud at the allegations. The only person trying to steal an election here is Donald Trump. Now, let me go back to your original question,
yes,
Bill.
Yes.
I think the root of this, and it's alluded to in this article in the Wall Street Journal, is the heightened inequality that we have. We this country has become economically more unequal over the last, I'd say, 40 years than any other country in the world. And it started with Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan, you know, began a series of tax cuts that have favored the rich and favored corporations. And that has continued nonstop during every Republican administration except the first George Bush, who realized he had to raise some taxes at one spell, and he certainly paid a price for it in the Republican Party. But that has continued unabated. And right now, we're suffering from the worst inequality that America has ever seen, even if we go back to the days of the robber barons in the early 20th century. So what has happened is that as people become less and less equal to each other, and there's more income inequality, then I think suspicions arise. And we have seen a more vicious political environment get worse by the year and each and every year. And then Trump took that and doubled down on it. He believed that divisiveness was the way to sell his campaign to the country, and he doubled down on it even more in 2020 than he did in 2016. You know, making comments about that were racial in nature, belittling people, insulting people. I mean, we have never seen a politician in the history of America insult people the way Donald Trump has. And if you think that that's going to increase anybody's trust in Trump, I can't imagine who it would be. But the last thing that I'll add is I think we have a rather extraordinary rural-urban divide when it comes to this trust issue. And the rural residents believe, and perhaps rightfully so, that the urban people don't understand their way of life. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some truth to that. I grew up in a place where, in a small town, located in a very rural farming area, about an hour northeast of Indianapolis. And I think there's an extraordinary difference. And as the rural populations get smaller and smaller, I think that rural-urban divide kind of gets even worse because there are fewer of them, and they see their towns dying away, and they see their livelihoods going away, particularly in farming communities, and I think that creates a great deal of distrust of what Republicans commonly call the urban elite.
All right, John, you'll be up next after we take our break. Mona's Danish Bakery is so delighted that the holidays are here and they can take care of all of your holiday needs, what kind of pie you'd like, what kind of dinner rolls. We were up there yesterday ordering the dinner rolls, and they have something new I had not seen, Jeff and John, beautiful kind of a deep dish coffee cake. And that would really... Now I'm kind of torn between, do I do the Danish Kringle on Christmas, or maybe I'll do the coffee cake for
Tough
Christmas?
Tough decision. Get both.
Get both. Anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Make your order through monasdanishbakery.com. You can walk in right now, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Put in your order and have lunch while you're up there. Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios with John Munger and Jeff Rogers. Matt, I know you've been on hold for a while. We'll try to get to you right after the break.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, the Monday political face-off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowland Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. One of our great sponsors, Vero Amore Restaurant and Noble Hops. If you bring in five cans for the Community Food Bank this month, $5 off your meal. And while you're at it, how about a gift card promotion? Buy $100, get a $25 gift card. Happy holidays from the two locations of Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops craft beer and fine fare out in Oro Valley. John Munger is here and Jeff Rogers. And let's go to Matt, who's been waiting very patiently on the live line. Our topic of the day, why Americans are so distrustful of each other. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, first, let me compliment both John and Jeff because they've got their finger on a lot of the issues, both past, present, and maybe as we proceed future. But at the essence of it, it's not Ronald Reagan and it's not Barack Obama. America has fell into this trap because of the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War was the moment where we basically divided into two class structures. Those that went to war and were drafted, and those that were able to escape the draft because of public policies that allowed them to extricate themselves from their own circumstances and become what we later saw was the baby boom generation.
All right.
And I could go on further, but everything that they said is true. But until we somehow resolve that sin, we're going to remain a nation divided.
All right, the baby boom generation and the Vietnam War, Jeff?
I think that's actually a very astute observation, Matt. I'm impressed by that thought. That was a real problem in America. I mean, there was a sort of have or have nots, and you know, I saw that in my own hometowns where, you know, various people, I had relatives who were able to basically avoid Vietnam with the right doctor's note, you might say.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw lots of other friends and family members who weren't able to. And I guess Donald Trump is sort of, you know, one great example of that with his bone spurs. He was able to avoid, you know, that. And that's something that has caused me to always be a believer that we should have a very strict draft with no exemptions. I believe everybody needs skin in the game. I don't believe we would have gone to Iraq under the George W. Bush administration if we had a draft. Because if you've got senators and congressmen who have skin in the game, they're going to think twice and they're going to look a little more carefully at what turned out to be fake reports of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And I think everyone ought to have skin in that game. And I've believed that for decades.
What do you think, John?
Well, I will say that I agree with Matt, and I think it's also an astute observation. But I want to remind Matt that I was a draftee.
I know you were.
Served. That occurred because people recognized at the time that only lower echelons of the socioeconomic scale were being drafted. And they ended that and went to lottery numbers. I got a bad lottery number. I got drafted. Even though I was in law school at the time, there were no exemptions for that. I disagree, though, that we should go to a draft now. I can tell you, having been in a draft army and then watched the professional armies that we have today, the professional armies are so much more
motivated.
Motivated, trained. There's just a different mentality between draft troops like I was, and professional soldiers. They fight better, they're better trained, they're better motivated. So I don't think we should be doing that. But let me go back to Jeff's comments. Let me remind everybody that Ronald Reagan, and especially Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump, this income equality was ending under Donald Trump. There had been, we created more jobs under Donald Trump than had ever been created. Income equality was on the decline, not the rise, for the first time since Ronald Reagan. And we had the lowest black unemployment rate, the lowest Hispanic unemployment rate. Donald Trump was reducing income inequality. Jeff's comments that it was increasing is just wrong.
That's not true.
And let me also add that he's commented about negative comments by Donald Trump. Let me tell you where it started. It started when Hillary Clinton started calling me a deplorable, and then Barack Obama was quoted as saying that we conservatives are poor people who cling to their religion and their guns. Yeah, I do cling to my religion and my guns, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I didn't like the president of the United States doing that type of thing. People have a tendency, Jeff has a tendency, to forget those things that divided this country. Talk about division. I didn't like being called a deplorable. I didn't like being pigeonholed as somebody who clings only, my only thought is to cling to religion and guns. I don't like the fact that they've forgotten that income inequality was diminished under Donald Trump.
That's actually not true, John.
Yes, it is.
It's
true.
The rich got richer and the poor got poorer.
No.
All right. Well,
income rose amongst...
Okay, guys.
Now, there's a lot of billionaires out there, but that's because of this globalism and that the elites in Wall Street are doing, and Donald Trump's been trying to stop that.
All right, it's time for Jeff. It's his turn.
Donald Trump will leave office as the only president in modern history with fewer jobs than when he took over. Now, he didn't destroy the booming economy that he inherited from Barack Obama, but he did not gain nearly that number of raw job numbers that Obama did during the Obama presidency.
That's not true.
There were more jobs created
by February when COVID started. It was COVID that caused the job destruction.
Right, and it was Donald Trump that caused most of these COVID deaths by being unprepared. We have 4% of the population of the world and over 20% of the deaths in the world.
Let's go back to the topic, and I think Matt brought this up about it started in the Vietnam era. But I want to go back to the rural. Both of you guys come from rural backgrounds. I think Jeff made a really good point to emphasize that real quickly here.
I've been talking for years about the divergence in this country between rural America and urban America.
I call it
Main Street versus Wall Street. Donald Trump has been fighting. Conservatives have been fighting for Main Street. The problem is that the elites that run the Democratic Party, all of these billionaires that support the Democratic Party, are from Wall Street, and they love China. They love doing business in China and having our intellectual property stolen, and because they make money doing that. But meanwhile, Main Street is dying. Rural America is dying. And that's why there's a division. One of the reasons there's a division in this country, and Donald Trump's been, and the conservatives have been fighting it, and we're right now back to globalists again running the White House, running the Democrat Congress, and we're going to see more globalism and a decline in wealth. We're going to see illegal immigrants coming across the border again, stealing jobs from Americans, pushing down the wages for Americans. And it's the Democratic Party behind that.
All right, Jeff,
well,
final word.
The bulk of the rescue policies that were passed during the beginning of this COVID crisis, the bulk of that money went to large corporations and giant businesses. It did not go to Main Street. And the tax cuts that were early on in the administration in 2017, the same thing happened with that. Most of that went to billionaires, wealthy corporations, and wealthy individuals. It did not go to Wall Street. And Republican policies have favored giant corporations and Wall Street and the wealthy for decades and decades.
Gotta go, guys. All right, John Munger, Jeff Rogers, hope it's a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year for both of you. See you in a couple of weeks.
Same to you, Bill.
Actually be the first face-off of the new year. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, moesgallery.com, a proud sponsor for our Monday Political Face-Off. Be right back. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And speaking of green things, 25,000 poinsettias were grown locally. There's still some available if you're out and about over in the area of 3384 East River Road. Why not stop by, pick up a couple of poinsettias, and give them to a friend who may be alone this holiday season? It would certainly brighten up the season for sure. And see the unique collection of Mexican folk art, holiday treasures, home decor, and more at Zocalo Village, 3384 East River Road, 50 years and still growing at Green Things. Our thanks to Green Things for their support over the years, one of our longtime sponsors. 2 weeks from today, we will have 10 years under our belt. We'll begin the 11th year of this program. The Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on the environment is Mitch Tobin. Mitch is the director of the Water Desk. That is a relatively new journalism initiative at the University of Colorado in Boulder. The initiative focuses on Western water issues in the Colorado River Basin. Mitch is an award-winning journalist, former environmental reporter for the Napa Valley Register in California, the Tucson Citizen, the Arizona Daily Star. He's the author of a highly acclaimed book titled Endangered, which shows why so many species are at risk of extinction. That book won a gold medal in the Independent Book Publishers category, and Mitch joins us now from his home base in Colorado. Mitch, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
It's been a very difficult year for the environment here in Tucson. We had a kind of a light rain, maybe a quarter of an inch a couple of weeks ago. But other than that, we barely broke 4 inches, Mitch Tobin. And normally we would have this time of year a yearly total of about 12 inches. The monsoon, the summer rain, never really materialized. Is our story unique in southern Arizona, or is this something that is being repeated throughout the Colorado River Basin?
You know, it's really not unique. I know it's been very dry down there, but that's also been the case here in Colorado, for instance, and really throughout the entire Southwest and large parts of the entire American West. So there's been a pretty severe drought that has developed over the course of 2020, and it's maybe not received as much attention as it would otherwise, given the pandemic, the protests, the elections, so much other stuff going on. But certainly we saw it manifest very clearly in this terrible wildfire season in many different states throughout the region. And so currently there's a pretty severe drought. It doesn't look like it's going to disappear anytime soon. We're now entering the critical period of the winter when we hope to see the snowpack develop, because that's really the key ingredient to western streams and rivers.
Is there much snow so far in the basin?
Not really. I mean, we're definitely below average here in Colorado and in most parts of the Colorado River Basin. It's been quite dry, and so, you know, we're seeing a number of ski resorts have delayed their openings. There's very limited terrain that's opening at this point, so that's a pretty good barometer. But certainly the scientists who study this keep track of how much snow is in the mountains very carefully, and so far it's been a subpar year. And you know, I think it's important to remember that last year was actually an okay year. It was roughly average in the West and in the Colorado River Basin when it came to the snowpack. But we had such a warm and dry spring and summer that when you look at the runoff to the Colorado River and its tributaries, it was well below normal. So because of things like climate change, drying and warming the atmosphere, the aridification, even if we have an okay year as far as snowpack, not as much water is making it to the rivers and the reservoirs. And so we'll see what happens. There's still, you know, many months to go in this winter, but it's not off to a good start.
You know, I think many of us are just praying that this was an anomaly where the rains didn't show up. In my 32 years in town, there's never been a summer like it, and it's a very unusual summer, to say the least, and we're hoping that we'll get back on track. But when you're in the middle of a drought, that may be very difficult to do, and the way the temperatures have been warming up, this is a very serious situation. And as you say, with the pandemic obviously is the lead story, but without the pandemic, climate change in the West, I think, would be the top story of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I think without all of these other enormous news stories, I think there would be even more attention on things like the wildfires. It was really just an incredibly bad year, and this very severe drought that has developed. And so I guess, you know, there's only so much attention that people have and only so much space in terms of the news. So it has maybe not received as much attention. But, you know, hopefully the pandemic will eventually go away with people getting vaccinated. But we're still going to have these really long-term chronic issues with our water supply, climate change, wildfires. And, you know, you mentioned the monsoon. Think of how important those summer rains are, not only for the people in southern Arizona and elsewhere, but for all of the wildlife that are trying to make their way in the desert. And so, you know, certainly for the natural world, it's been a tough year as well.
With the incoming Biden administration, there will be a change in direction, certainly, Mitch Tobin, on climate change, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a pretty stark difference in terms of the Trump administration's attitude towards climate change, which in large measure is denial of the problem even existing, and trying to undermine all of the efforts that have been made to address greenhouse gas emissions. And so I think there's going to be a very dramatic change, at least in terms of the policy preferences, the rhetoric, you know, whether things can get done in terms of changing policies, changing our energy systems. You know, that's still going to take a lot of effort, and it's not necessarily something that you can just flip a switch and do. But certainly there are some things like rejoining the Paris Climate Accords that the new administration can do in terms of reversing executive orders. But this is going to be a long fight in terms of trying to decarbonize the economy. And, you know, a lot of people are quite concerned that we've lost a lot of time over the last 4 years when the Trump administration has gone out of its way not to address climate change and, in fact, to try to undermine efforts to do so.
Do you think there'll be a change in direction in the way the Forest Service will look upon fighting these wildfires?
You know, it's a good question. It has become, you know, in some ways the biggest thing that they do, and in some years it consumes the majority of their budget. And, you know, they, for many, many years, decades really, have been warning that we're in this situation, even taking climate change out of the equation because of fire suppression. But if you add the fact that it's getting drier and hotter, more significant droughts, you'd be hard pressed to find anybody who thinks the wildfire problem is going to get better. But, you know, they face a dilemma where there are private property and homes and valuable natural resources that they want to protect. So I don't think that the Forest Service and other public lands agencies are going to stop fighting fires. But for many years, they have said that, you know, one of the things they want to try to do is allow at least some fires to burn if they're not a threat to people and their property and their homes and important natural areas in order to clear out that fuel. And so it all, you know, depends on the situation, the weather in the moment. But we really can't thin our way out of this problem. That's very expensive, and there's just not the resources to do. So a lot of people feel like one of the ways that we can address this accumulation of fuels and this heightened fire danger is with things like prescribed burns, when people can set the fires when the weather conditions are okay and they can keep it in control. So I think, you know, this has been a real eye-opening year for a lot of people in the United States seeing these images of wildfires. But, you know, the Forest Service has been really grappling with this increasingly difficult problem for decades, and it doesn't really show much signs of getting better.
All right, Mitch Tobin, we'll let you go. Director of the Water Desk, how is that initiative going at UC Boulder?
It's going great. You know, we've really been excited to support some great journalism, giving out grants, including we recently gave a grant to Tony Davis, my former colleague at the Arizona Daily Star. So it feels really good to support journalists who need help more than ever. And, you know, water issues, I think, are just going to become more and more important. And we really need reporters and journalists covering those issues very closely.
Tony's a great guy. We had him on recently to congratulate him on being named Reporter of the Year here in Arizona by the Press Club. He's a great guy and your former colleague, as you say, at the Arizona Daily Star. Mitch, thanks for coming on our program. Thanks for being a part of this program. And I want to wish you and yours a wonderful holiday season. Thank you, Mitch Tobin.
Thanks. You too, Bill, to you and to your visitors, wishing you the best, and your listeners for 2021.
Thank you. We're all hoping 2021 will be better. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Mitch was on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, one of our legacy sponsors, been with us pretty much since day one, and day one goes back to January of 2011. That means our 10-year anniversary show will be 2 weeks from today. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, what a great sponsor. We've sent so many of our visitors, Tucson visitors, to that area, and they love it. And my suggestion, if you got some time off over the holidays, start thinking about a trip in 2021 when COVID is behind us, or at least people are starting to feel comfortable again about traveling. Visit southwestnewmexico.org, and you will find a lot of things to do and some great places to stay. Let's welcome now one of our fine contributors to the program, historian Ken Scoville. Ken, how are you?
I'm fine today. Beautiful day out.
Yes, it is. This Christmas is so different. You know, normally folks would be thinking about getting together with lots of friends and relatives. That's not happening. That's pretty much been a hallmark of Tucson Christmases back through the ages, hasn't it?
Oh, sure. In fact, and I think for the listeners to sort of think about, when Tucson was a much smaller place, people were really isolated from the outside world. So in some ways, you could make an analogy. So it was a very strong social network where people really tried to celebrate each other's Christmases and even help the less fortunate in Tucson. And we're talking in the 1860s and 70s.
Even back then in the late 1800s, I'm sure that Christmas meant shopping. And of course, as the downtown developed in the heyday of the downtown department stores, everybody would be out right now bustling about getting those last minute Christmas gifts.
Right, very much so. And one thing I want to make sure we talked about today, and I gave you that information, because so many people are sort of camping out and staying home, I thought it'd be a great time for people to sort of explore a little bit of Tucson that they haven't. And you can actually go visit all the different eras of Tucson, and then you can think about what Christmas was like in each one of those eras. And there's a wonderful guide called A Guide to Tucson's Historic Neighborhoods. And I don't know if you want to put the link up on your site, or people could just look it up. It's a wonderful map with all the architectural styles and all the 10, oh gosh, I guess maybe 20 now, historic neighborhoods in Tucson.
And the name of the book is A Guide to Tucson's Historic Neighborhood.
Well, it's not a book. It's actually an online link to a pamphlet that you can download or print out if you want to.
Okay.
A Guide to Tucson's Historic Neighborhood. And it is excellent. The University of Arizona Brooks Jeffrey was involved with some of it. And it takes you through the myriad of architectural styles from the early Sonoran row houses and things built out of adobe to after the arrival of the railroad and Victorian and other territorial styles. And thinking again about Christmas, and as you drive around and visit some of these neighborhoods, by the 1890s, enough people had come in on the railroad from the east that they started wanting to have Christmas trees. So we started celebrating more Victorian Christmases, but there was always the overlap with the Mexican traditions in Tucson. Going to church was always a big event for
residents. Why don't you articulate for us some of the neighborhoods that you would suggest?
Well, I think it's one of the other things interesting, and obviously I've been involved with a long time, is that it goes out in concentric circles. So if you go down to, let's say, everybody knows where the Pima County Courthouse or the Tile Dome is. That's the El Presidio neighborhood. And that, along with Barrio Libre, which is south of the Convention Center, those are our two oldest neighborhoods where you're going to find Sonoran row houses. In fact, the Tucson Museum of Art has the earliest adobe buildings, for the most part, in Tucson. And then if you walk down Main Avenue or drive down, you can see all the different architectural styles. But then after the arrival of the railroad, we would get Armory Park, which is towards the east. And now you have all the Victorian neighborhoods, and all of those would have, you know, been waiting for expectantly on the train to bring in your Christmas tree. And then as the U of A was established and 1891, now West University would develop. And those would be more bungalows, and the styles and fashions would change along with the architecture.
You know, I've noticed the Sam Hughes neighborhood has a real mix of old housing, and there's some new in there, because I like to walk in that area around Himmel Park. And that's a fun neighborhood just to get out and walk in, that area of Sam Hughes. Do you know much about that area, Ken?
Oh, sure. Well, Sam Hughes, what we have out there a lot is what we call imported architectural styles, where people were coming from California and everybody wanted the houses to look like Mission. So we had Mission Revival style. Or you had other Spanish influences, Spanish colonial and Pueblo style. They wanted sort of people that came from New Mexico, one of the Pueblos. So Sam Hughes is a wonderful collection, all different styles, even some maybe postmodern, some infill projects that are sort of interesting. And people sort of get confused. Sam Hughes was actually named after the school and the neighborhood after Sam Hughes, but he never visited that neighborhood. But his wife, Atanasia, used to come out to the school and have Atanasia days there.
Oh,
so that's
really
how it got to be Sam Hughes neighborhood. And then if you go a little farther north up to like the intersection of, let's say, Campbell and Glen, and go a little bit east, you're going to see ranch styles. Everybody wanted to have their house look like a ranch after World War II and people coming out with the GI Bill and wanting to have qualify under FHA.
What about the El Encanto neighborhood? There are some beautiful homes in there, almost mansions.
Yeah, well, El Encanto, and along with Colonial Solano to the south, that was our next really example of displaying your wealth and your success in Tucson. And those were back into the 1930s. What another interesting sidebar, typically you built the destination resort hotel, which was the El Conquistador at the time. People came out to visit, loved Tucson, and, oh, look, I can make a lot reservation and have a beautiful home built in El Encanto. So it was always the hotel bringing the tourists out to sell them the home. So, again, El Encanto is very much of a revival style, but much more of a pretentious nature, with a lot of houses being probably 5,000 to 6,000 square feet in there.
And I didn't think about that with the connection to the El Conquistador Hotel right there.
Sure. Yeah. Every resort hotel always had a spinoff housing development. And if you go out to look at the El Conquistador today, or you're thinking about La Paloma, there were always neighborhoods with houses for sale that tied in with bringing people out to visit the hotel as tourists.
It's too bad the Arizona Inn is not open. And I know a lot of people are missing the big Christmas tree this year.
Well, I don't know. But I've been checking out lights in the evening. The Christmas tree is up in the library, and you can see it from the window.
What?
Yes. If you drive by on Elm, I know I have a traffic jam, but if you drive by there, I think they set up for the family, and I like to think also for the community. The tree is all lit, and you can look in and see it through the window.
Wow. Learn something right here on the Buckmaster Show. All right, Ken, and again, that download, you can go to TucsonAZ.gov. And then you can get it through Preservations. That's a link to the Guide to Tucson Historic Neighborhoods.
Right. It'll pop up pretty quick, and you can download it. And it's very well done. Well, have a great holiday. Merry Christmas, Bill.
Thank you very much, Ken Scoville. Merry Christmas to you as well. Ken Scoville, our resident historian on the Buckmaster Show, and that's going to wrap it up on this Monday of Christmas week. Enjoyed being with you today. We'll look forward to being with you tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of John Couch, engineering and producing, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great day, and I want to tell you that we've got a couple of special shows coming up on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. We will be here on tape those days, but we'll be live right up and through Wednesday. Have a great afternoon.